Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to get into the clearing counterparty issue with the panel, but before I do so, Mr. Pickle, I have a question for you. In the previous panel, we had quite a discussion about naked credit default swaps. And as we were having that discussion, which I found to be a very interesting discussion, I was thinking about ISDA and wondering if ISDA had a perspective on the whole issue of the different types of credit default swaps and the approaches that we may take to this issue. Do you have a take on the previous discussion we had?
Well, I think as Superintendent DiNallo acknowledged, there's a range of transactions that, in his sense, sartorial or covered or whatever, might apply to holding the bonds, having some other relationship, taking a view on the credit. And so where in the spectrum, whatever your notion of what naked shorting may be, it's not clear to me, you know, how you'd make that distinction. And one of the fundamental facts about markets that work effectively and have sufficient liquidity is that you do have people engaging in that market who don't necessarily have a direct interest, but they're willing to take a view, they're willing to provide some liquidity to the market, and I think that that's a very important part of all well-functioning markets, and that's true of the credit default swap market as well. One other thing to keep in mind is that in any credit default swap, again, a bilateral contract, there's a party, yes, who is shorting that credit, who's taking a view that credit may deteriorate over time. But there's also the other party who's taking the long position. They're taking a view that at that price, they're willing to take exposure to that underlying credit. So that's a very dynamic relationship there that the whole over-the-counter or privately negotiated derivatives business is based on.
Well, thank you. This is an incredibly complex issue, as I'm sure everybody will acknowledge. And I'm sure that our committee will need to have a lot more input from all the parties on how to understand this as we move forward with possible federal regulation. With regard to the clearing system that we've all been talking about, I think several, if not all, of the members of this panel have probably been involved with the discussions that have been going on with the Federal Reserve about trying to develop some kind of a clearing system. And I note that we have the CME, and we have ICE and others with the New York Stock Exchange and others who are all interested in performing this function. So my first question to the panel, this is probably for Mr. Duffy and Mr. Short, but anybody can jump in here, is there any reason why there need only be one clearing counterparty, or could all of you do what you're talking about and others jump in as well? Are there benefits or disadvantages to a multi-clearing party approach? Mr. Duffy?
I always believe there's room for competition, so we don't have issue with that. The CME has had a great history in this business, longer than anybody else, I believe, in the business of clearing product. So we feel, again, Senator, very comfortable and confident that the Federal Reserve and other regulators will look at us and say that we are a competent model to do this type of business. So, you know, as far as the competition goes, I'd be very surprised if the U.S. government was to try to anoint anybody a winner in clearing of any type of products when there's multiple parties to do so. So I look at this and say that, you know, it's competition like we have on all our products, and we will compete for this business.
Thank you. Mr. Short?
I share Mr. Duffy's view on that. I wouldn't see the Fed anointing a single entity to do this, and I think there are definitely some benefits from competition in terms of getting the clearing solution right. Competition ultimately drives innovation, and I think it's important not to lose sight of that.
Well, thank you. I'd like to just ask a general question to the entire panel, have anybody who wants to jump in here, but we use the terms a clearing counterparty or a clearing system or whatever. What exactly are we talking about there when we talk about establishing a clearing counterpart or a clearing system?
Well, ahead, I'll be Mr. happy Duffy. To. What we're talking about is obviously the exchange is acting as the buyer for every seller, the seller for every buyer, doing a mark-to-market twice daily, doing the pays and collects twice daily. So that is essentially what we do, and we risk manage each and every one of these products throughout the day. So if we see the product moving in a certain direction, we have the ability to call for margin from the people that are on the one side of the trade, and they have up to, well, as less time as an hour to go ahead and facilitate that money so we can pay the other side of the transaction.
Let me interrupt.
So we truly act as a clearing, and we hold $1.6 billion in guarantee funds and hold an additional close to $100 billion in funds to protect all these positions.
Let me interrupt you right there and ask. In your testimony, you indicated that if you were to do this, you thought you could reduce the exposure, and I assume this is in the credit default swap market,
yep,
by a factor of 10. What are you talking about?
Well, we'll net them down. Right now, these exposures, as they talk about them in the notional value of $55 trillion or $600 trillion in the total marketplace, that's taken account for the both sides of the market. We would take them into the clearinghouse and net all these positions out. And so you net out and compress down the risk associated with them.
So the entire, the net risk would be dramatically reduced because...
Reduced by 10 is the way we figure it right now, yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Anybody else want to jump in on that? Mr. Short? Mr. Bickle?
We would have a similar model involving a central counterparty with comprehensive risk management systems and margining of positions. I guess in distinction from what Mr. Duffy described, we would be a New York trust company, a regulated bank, and a special purpose bank to which people or major market participants would become members, and those who were not members would trade through members. But from a risk management standpoint, it would be very similar to what Mr. Duffy described. I think one distinction would be this would be a special purpose clearing entity solely for credit default swaps. We understand there is some concern about the idea of mingling credit default swap risk with other risks that broader markets serve. So this would be a special purpose entity that solely clears CDS and credit exposures. Wouldn't touch agriculture. Wouldn't touch other futures or exposures.
Thank you. Let me just ask one last quick question. In a July hearing that we held, and actually this was in the Banking Committee, I asked one of the witnesses whether there was a danger in centralizing the credit risk in one institution and whether that could actually increase systemic risk. That kind of gets back to my first question as to whether we should have one clearing system or not. But is there a danger if we were to centralize all of this risk too much in terms of creating a systemic risk?
I'll just speak on behalf of the CME Group. I don't believe so, Senator. I mean, we look at the products that we trade today. ICE has basically some exclusives on some of their products, one being the Russell 2000 futures contract. So they're the only one that's able to trade that. They can manage that risk. The CME Group has exclusives on S&P 500 and NASDAQ and other products. So we have been able to manage that risk as one entity, so I don't see that as an issue.
Mr. Pickle and Mr. Short.
Okay. I think that in our area, of course, that is all very decentralized. You've got all these bilateral relationships, and parties should be managing those relationships to the extent they haven't. That's something that they should improve in terms of their internal processes and risk management. But there are protections in place, including regular calls for collateral, movements of collateral even on a daily basis between counterparties. In fact, a situation like AIG, what they had agreed to was not regular exchange of collateral for their positions, but provision of collateral only upon a downgrade. And so when they were downgraded, all of a sudden they had a significant liquidity requirement to post collateral for those trades. The better practice, and I think banking supervisors encourage their banks to do this, they have regular collateral exchanging in the relationship. If you see your position declining, you have that additional discipline as well as the credit protection of collateral that you've introduced to that relationship. So certainly the clearinghouses have a good record of managing that risk and being able to take on significant risks and managing it effectively. But there's also a great benefit to having this diffuse nature of managing risk on a bilateral basis.
Thank you. My time is up.